If this is taken as casual, I can eat these crackers.
Yeah, there you go.
Punch on them.
You can burp, whatever you want to do, whatever makes you happy.
Did you ever see Fight Club?
A lot of bodily functions are not out loud.
There's that scene where the main character, who has no name, finds that his apartment's been bombed out. And then, did you see the movie?
It's a great while back, yeah.
And then he calls Tyler Durden up on the phone. He had his phone number for no good reason. And he's not really sure why he calls him. And he's in a payphone in front of his bombed-out apartment calling him. And you don't see Tyler, but you hear him answering the other end of the phone. And he's like, "What's up?" And he's eating these chips.
It's all in his head.
Right, it's all in his head, but he's eating these, potato chips. And if you listen to the commentary on the DVD, they're like, "We did, 30 takes of that scene." And in one of them, Brad Pitt just ate a bunch of potato chips for no reason. And that was the one we ended up going with.
It's the one that was good.
That's great.
Whoa, wrong show. This is the Linux Link Tech Show.
Sorry.
Right. Episode 71. It's really late. 1:20 in the morning. And,
Dan is compiling over in the corner.
We got done with
here in Boston.
All right, we're here in Boston. We got done with the Linux
Cambridge
World
Excellent.
Expo today. And we had this really fantastic interview with Nat Friedman. Am I saying his name right?
Yes,
Nat Friedman. Of Novell. And we got a really long interview planned for you. Just check this out. Listen to it. It's really cool, very informative. And we'll catch up with you right after the interview. Right?
Sounds good to me.
Bye. The one that sounds the most natural. See, this way, they don't, everybody that listens knows that it's not a canned interview and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If they know that you're cruising with some crackers, it's good that way.
Yeah, we normally do it so live, so let it fly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of course, this kind of tape probably won't make it out to CNN anyway, so.
Yeah, but somebody will write a transcript of it and then take some quote out of context, and it'll be a serious PR and a disaster. That's how it usually goes.
Yeah, the usual.
We'll cut it so it.
We'll make it really interesting, yeah.
Well,
let's start with the
questions.
It's running.
We're
good to go.
We're here with Nat Friedman with Novell, formerly Zimian.
Yep.
Were you there with the Helix?
Vice President of Zimian, Helix Code / International GNOME Support. So, yeah, I was there since the beginning. We had a whole bunch of names. Naming is a hard thing to do, and we couldn't figure out.
See, now, definitively, he has called it GNOME as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and not GNOME.
Yeah, when Miguel chose the name, Miguel is Mexican, he found a GNOME, and when he chose the name, he wanted to create one of those acronym kind of names, but he didn't, and he knew, GNOME was an English word, G-N-O-M-E, but he had no idea what it meant or what it actually was, so just kind of chose it. Pronunciation came from GNU, so.
So I guess the first question is, what are you doing these days at Novell? What is your primary function there?
So until very recently, my primary function at Novell, in the year and a half since we sold our company to Novell, has been to kind of lead up the development of Linux desktop efforts. I knew this was going to happen. Okay. And that kind of culminated last, October when we released Novell Linux Desktop. that was, you know, sort of a, you know, a major release for us. And now what we're doing is we've got a whole bunch of efforts to sort of like, I don't think people realize quite what a broad array of software we have under development right now that is going to find its way into the SUSE Linux professional releases and then eventually into a kind of like an enterprise class supported, you know, 5-year release. Another release of Novell Linux Desktop, essentially. But, I mean, we have a, you know, tremendous kind of a, you know, range of things happening right now on the Linux Desktop. So that's my primary function that I've been doing. And then recently, I started getting involved in what we are calling the collaboration teams at Novell. So essentially, teams that make collaboration software like email and calendaring. And the main product there is something called GroupWise. So I run that team. And then today we launched Hula, which is a new project, and you know, new open source project. And I don't know if you guys saw the, you know, announcement or the website, or you've been totally incommunicado here at the show. Yeah. So yeah, the Hula project is a new project we started to create an open source collaboration server. We think, ever since we built Evolution about 5 years ago, we've been, you know, hearing the demand for an open source collaboration server pretty strongly. And of course, you've got tons of mail servers out there, but you know, I think what most people mean when they say collaboration servers, they need calendaring. Right. And the reason there's been no open source calendaring servers, there's never been an open protocol for calendaring that's had any viability at all. There's been this CAP effort, which has gone on for years and years and years, and it's always been right around the corner, and it's produced this bloated, unimplementable protocol, you know, that you know, basically no one supports. So this has created this huge gap in the open source stack, you know. You've got like, you've got a web server, you've got databases, you know, you have a functioning server operating system in most areas. You know, you even have a desktop that's becoming highly competitive and really not so far behind anymore. And, you know, and yet there's no open source collaboration server that's really got credibility. There's open source projects out there to create an open source collaboration server. You can find lots of PHP-based solutions, and, you know, there's stuff like opengroupware.org and OpenExchange, but no one's really put a stake in the ground and said, we're going to claim the space, we're going to put a lot of energy behind it, and we're going to make this a real, you know, functioning server. And so hopefully we're doing that today. You know, the Hula project that we're launching is really exciting. I mean, basically today what I'm doing is sitting in the IRC channel or, you know, talking to people like you guys explaining Hula. It's just, we've started the project off and kind of bootstrapped it with a couple hundred thousand lines of code from a former Novell product called Netmail. And so we've taken that code and we just spent the last 60 days scrubbing it and, you know, removing all proprietary dependencies. And so that's available now. And, you know, as of this morning, I'm on the channel and people are joining. We had 50 people in the channel this morning and some guys porting it to PowerPC. And, you know, so we've got pretty good excitement behind it already. We're taking a little different approach from, like, I think what a lot of the other open source projects are doing that are looking at the collaboration server space. If you look at those things in their websites, you know, they have this plethora of features. You know, they have task management and document sharing and many other things. And it's usually, you know, this sort of plugin architecture has driven this, you know, huge, you know, biodiversity of features that have built up on these things. But in our opinion, you know, it's probably better to do a couple things really well than to do a lot of things.
A lot of things, yeah. Not too well.
Yeah, especially because I think in many cases, people who use collaboration servers really just want mail and calendar. I really don't think most people want much else. Some do document sharing, you know, like exchange public folders and stuff. But I think for most people, it's really just mail and calendar. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to do an awesome job with mail and calendar. You know, we're going to, hopefully, do, you know, like when Google came out as a search engine. You know, I don't know if you guys remember very well, but it's hard to remember at this point or even conceive of this fact, but when Google came out, it was sort of a little bit like, what are you guys doing? You know, the search engine thing is solved, you know. I use AltaVista all the time. It's great. AltaVista would update its indexes every 28 days, and that seemed reasonable at the time. You know, Google now updates frequently updated pages, you know, regularly, and, you know, the whole index is continuously refreshing, which was just, you know, totally strange concept at the time. But, you know, same with the web browser. You know, Firefox, it's just a web browser, and it's, you know, it's very late to the game. But maybe I shouldn't be eating his crackers. But it's, but it's just simply better. You know, it's faster, and people like tab browsing and pop-up blocking and stuff like that.
It does this one thing very well.
It does one thing well. So I think if you look at calendars in particular, basically calendars have not changed in 20 years, you know. Create appointment, specify, you know, topic, specify location, specify start time and duration. You know, you can mark it public or private. You can free busy search for somebody else's time. You know, you can attach a document to the calendar appointment. And that's it. That's what they all do. And if you look at Exchange and if you look at Notes, these things were all designed in this kind of pre-web world, you know, this kind of, you know, this period where, you know, one of the main goals of those things was to become these platforms on which companies would build things like their HR functions, like expense reporting or vacations. That was the idea. You know, Modus Notes and Exchange are not just mail and calendar servers. They're a whole architecture, a set of APIs on which you can build things. You know, they have this forms interface where you build these little forms and you mail them around. You've seen this?
Yeah.
Nobody uses that anymore.
Right. Why would we use Lotus Notes to do our turnovers? We have like a whole process where we do application development and we do the whole turnover process where there's a process where there's sign-offs and you move it up in phases, and it's all built on Lotus Notes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like, you know, CVS in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really the thing, though, that's changed is that people don't use these proprietary platforms for that anymore. They use the web. You know, you have an internal website where you know, it's free. You can access it for any web browser. You don't have to have this Lotus Notes client installed. It's much more flexible. You know, so in many ways it's worse because it doesn't have workflow that you have in Lotus or you have in Exchange. But people are now solving that problem in other ways. So this is sort of the classic. You know, the web is a disruptive technology for the original intent of these collaboration servers. And so we think it's time for someone to build a web-based collaboration server that does the basic things people want much better than, you know, so I have a whole bunch of ideas in calendaring in particular that I think will be interesting. I mean, I don't know, how many of you guys have cell phones? You all have cell phones.
Yeah.
So, right, so, and how many of you have like a calendar function on your cell phone?
There's one there, but
I don't
think I've ever used it.
And do you use it? No, nobody uses those things. Right, exactly. So, I mean, everyone's got a calendar in their cell phone. Nobody uses it. Everybody has appointments. You know, you have a doctor's appointment, or, you know, most people can't carry that around with them. So why not have a, you know, but everyone's cell phone can do text messaging now. So why not have a text messaging interface to your calendar where you get a text message 15 minutes before every appointment, where you can text your calendar and say today, and it texts you back your schedule for today, or you say Wednesday, and it sends you your Wednesday schedule, or, you know, you can text it and say dinner tomorrow with, you know, Brian, and it, you know, adds an appointment to your schedule. I mean, these things are trivial to do now. You know, it's just a matter of putting the code together. You know, or why not have, you know, why not have the ability to, you know, very easily create appointments and invite anyone with an email address? You know, if you ever used Evite, which is like a website for party invitations, you know, it's got a really nice interface. I mean, it's the classic web interface that's, you know, that's drowning in advertising and other content where, like, But it's got a nice interface in that you can just say, I want to invite these 10 people and type 10 email addresses, and they all get emails. There are these little HTML emails that just say, click here to RSVP. You know, so why can't, you know, they also try to encourage you to register because they have a business model based on that. But, you know, why can't I just make my calendar invite people the same way, and they get a little email in HTML that says, you're being invited to this meeting. Do you want to attend? Yes or no? And you click yes or no, and it updates the page, and it doesn't matter if you're using Yahoo Mail or whatever. I mean, these things should be easy to do, and a corporate calendar should work that way too. I mean, a personal calendar, obviously. You know, so you've got Exchange and Notes out there, which are pre-internet, which are way overcomplicated for what people are using them for today, which don't allow you to collaborate very easily or schedule appointments very easily outside of your company. So if you've got some people on Exchange and some who aren't, that's hard. You know, and then you've got, you know, and they're expensive and they don't scale. You know, you can get a couple thousand people on a PC on an Exchange server. So this Hula thing that we're sourcing, the code that we have out there today can do 250,000 people on a single, you know, dual Xeon PC. So we think we're pretty excited about this project.
So what's the client end to that then, the Hula? Is that going to be your existing application like Evolution, Sunbird?
Yeah.
iCal?
So I said earlier that one of the problems with calendaring generally was that there hasn't been this kind of, you know, cap failed, essentially. So we're supporting a new initiative called CalDAV, which we think has a tremendous chance of success as compared to cap. It's basically calendaring over web dev, so it seems fairly simple. And so we're going to support that in Hula. We're also going to make data available in a variety of formats. I mean, why not, right? So if I want to get my calendar as an ICS file, which is what people use for WebCal URIs or what they share on iCalShare.com or something like that, you know, it's read-only, but you can get the calendar. Why not make it available that way? Available as HTML, available as text, available RSS as XML, feeds. Available as an RSS feed, available as an RDF graph. I mean, why not? It's just another 10-minute template to write, and then you can script off your calendar. People can do anything they want with it. So we'll do that. We'll do CalDAV. And once we have CalDAV, we'll support Sunbird, and we'll support the KDE clients, and we'll support Evolution, and we'll support, you know, all those open clients. You know, Chandler we'll be able to support very easily. Getting Outlook support is going to be a little trickier. We'd like to do that. We're not quite sure how yet. It might be that you could write a MAPI provider for Outlook that speaks CalDAV, and that's the best way to go. But we're going to wait and see, I guess.
So then... Your idea for a framework.
But the main thing, sorry to interrupt you, but just to answer your client question, I mean, I think one of the most important clients is going to be the web client.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? I think you can do just tremendous things with web interfaces today. People have seen Google Maps and Gmail and Google Suggest. These guys have been showing everyone the way, you know. You can do just incredible, rich client-side applications in a browser now, and nobody's really gotten that. You know, it's not like the technologies have changed dramatically in the last 24 months, but nobody's gotten that, and so we get it. So we're going to build so that's the other major project, is that we're going to build a rich Gmail-like interface to mail, a JavaScript client like that, and we're going to build a real rich UI for calendar. You can drag and drop and move appointments around and that kind of stuff.
And it's ultra portable that way too.
Yeah, you can go. You can be at an internet cafe or on a friend's machine and get the same rich access to your calendar.
Mm-hmm.
That everybody else has. Exchange has a really nice web interface, but only if you use IE. You know, they use all these IE extensions.
Unfortunately, that doesn't work.
It doesn't work, and you don't need to do it that way.
Breaks all the time.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, because
which is why we all use Linux.
Exactly. You know, the website looks great in every other browser besides Internet Explorer.
Right.
No, exactly.
So Novell has GroupWise, and now they have the Open Exchange server. And their netmail is being rolled into Hula.
Yep.
Are they going to continue to carry three separate groupware applications, or are they going to start folding them in?
Well, first of all, Hula is new. The Open Exchange is new. If you want an enterprise class collaboration server right now in Linux, you have to use GroupWise. I mean, there's basically no other reasonable option. Hula is a project we're announcing. It's not a product roadmap that we've announced or anything like that. We've created this open source project. We're investing in it. We're going to get all these people excited about it in the community, we hope. We hope people will join the project. And people who are psyched about building great web interfaces or trying new things in calendaring or just really want a server like this, we hope they'll join the project. But they'd be welcome. But I think we're at the beginning of this with Hula. And we don't really consider that to be a if I'm a large company or something like that, it's not something you can, you're not interested yet. I think you might be in wait and see mode. GroupWise is a real important product for Novell. It drives a huge amount of revenue for us, from the collaboration business. It supports a lot of our efforts, and so we're going to continue to invest in GroupWise very heavily. Improve the web interface in GroupWise, add APIs to GroupWise so that people can get access to GroupWise information. We're adding some SOAP APIs for that. Over time, I think Hula will mature, and it'll take years. These open source projects just do. But I think it'll be very nice in the end. I think it'll be a good thing. Open Exchange, we're continuing to sell right now. Netline was on our press release for Hula. Netline are the people who make Open Exchange. And they're going to be contributing to Hula, and we're going to kind of figure out how to converge those projects over time. It may not be perfect in the end. We may not have one project, but I think we're going to make sure they work together. And we may, they may use the Hula mail and calendar in Open Exchange, or we may use parts of Open Exchange in Hula. We don't know yet. We can't know until we start doing the hacking.
Are you involved in Evolution anymore?
Yeah, Evolution. is part of my work. And Evolution's got, we're about to come out with 2.2 Evolution, which introduces a whole new plugin interface. The plugin interface, which is like the coolest thing ever. I mean, it's awesome. You can, we've got just these really great plugins people are writing now. Like one of them is that I can see my, somebody just wrote, I can see the weather forecast for the next 10 days in my calendar. So, as I go to schedule appointments, I can be like, oh, picnic, it looks like it's going to rain. I don't know. So, that's kind of neat. And you can also, there's a bunch of other great plugins too that people have been writing that provide all kinds of functionality. I wrote one actually a couple months ago that automatically syncs your buddy list from your Instant Messenger with your address book. So if you've got somebody, in your buddy list and in your address book, their IM information and their buddy icon show up in your address book. So that's kind of cool. That's kind of a neat thing.
Everybody loves that kind of thing.
Everybody likes that kind of thing. And it also auto populates your address book as you reply to mail. So if you send me a mail and I reply to you.
It's already in there.
Exactly. It puts your name and email address in there. Or if I already have your name, but I have a different email address, it adds that email address. So basically, in the past, in order to write functionality like this, you'd have to go in and hack Evolution. And it's kind of daunting for people. So, but I was able to write this plugin. Basically, it's 300 lines of code. It's just a standalone file. That's nice. That's nice. That makes it a lot easier.
Are there plans to integrate Evolution with GroupWise?
We're working on that right now. Right. It's actually happening in the public in CVS. You can get the code.
Huh.
I mentioned a SOAP interface to GroupWise earlier. So that's the interface we're using for Evolution. It's also something other people can use, like ISVs could use to, if they wanted to, pull GroupWise for information or, create new clients or anything like that. You could do that with this. But basically, that's we're the main client for the SOAP interface right now. And there's functionality working there. You can get your calendars. You can get mails via IMAP right now, but in 2.2 we're going to have SOAP mail, which means you'll be able to do like message retraction and return receipts and stuff like that. The advanced mail functionality. That's happening. You should see it in 2.2. 2.2 is coming out next month.
Okay.
It might take another month or two to stabilize after that, but the functionality will be there.
So then, do you think Evolution is going to be the you talked about the web interface,
mm-hmm.
but it seems that now you have Evolution that would connect with GroupWise and OpenExchange and
Hula.
Hula, which I would guess that as you're developing Hula, it's going to the connectability with Evolution is going to go right alongside.
Yeah, well, basically it's CalDAV, so we're going to add CalDAV to Hula, of course, because we think it's the right thing, and we're going to add it to Evolution also, and so they'll both speak it. Evolution doesn't really talk to OpenExchange right now. It doesn't really. It'll do email and all that, but it doesn't do. Talk to means calendar for people, I think.
Right. Okay.
It does address books. That's LDAP. It does email because that's IMAP or POP. But it doesn't do calendar right now.
So if you have a Evolution for GroupWise and for Hula,
mm-hmm.
do you see them taking the Evolution client and porting it over to other operating systems like OS X, Windows?
That's happening right now too. Both of those things. So we've got a. Evolution's been running on OS X for at least 3 years.
Is that natively or through Fink?
It's through Fink.
Through Fink.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'd be hard to do it without Fink or something like Fink because you need to have the supporting libraries in place. It doesn't use a native Cocoa UI or anything like that either, if that's what you're talking about. It does use the X server.
Right.
So we're not rewriting the Evolution UI in Cocoa, or Cocoa or anything like that. So, but there's been a vibrant community of we were petitioned once by Evolution OS X users to support Evolution on OS X. We got like 800 signatures or something like that. So we're going to actually release it on OS X. We're going to do binary builds for it and fix bugs in it. And that'll start in 2.2 next month also.
That's great.
Which is good. And then to answer your question again, we hired a guy named Tor Lilkovist about a month ago, 5 weeks ago. And Tor is the guy you might know from, he ported GIMP to Windows.
Okay.
And so he did a lot of work on GTK for Win32. So we hired him. He started a project to move Evolution onto Windows. And, we don't know how long it's going to take. We don't even know if he's going to be able to finish. But he's, he started the project. He's getting some people, helping him out in the community. And he's got, Orbit ported over and Dbus and a couple other components already. So, maybe we'll see the whole thing. Hope by before the end of the year. That'll be great.
One of the exciting things I noticed was on your blog you had a post about XGL.
Yeah.
Tighter integration, you know, interfacing directly with accelerated video hardware.
This stuff is unbelievable. I mean, that was for last week for me. That was like an epiphany when I even heard about XGL for the first time. It's the right way to do it. You run X on top of the accelerated layer. I mean, you know, just X on top of GL directly. It makes every one of those hacks just so much easier to do. I can show you after we're done talking. I can show you a little demo. I don't have all the cool hacks, but you can get an idea of the power. It's phenomenal what you can do with this thing. I mean, you know, once you have X running on top of GL, suddenly, you know, if you want to take a window and make an iconified version of it that's running, you know, that's like a single transformation, a single polygon transformation in the hardware. It's all hardware accelerated. So basically, if you have, you know, 3D hardware for your graphics, you know, we can take advantage of that. And this is exactly what OS X does. This is what Longhorn hopes to do, but doesn't do yet, can't do yet. We can do it for all existing applications without requiring a UI rewrite, just by, you know, making XGL work and getting working 3D hardware, you know, drivers from the vendors. So, you know, it's incredible. So the demo. So we hired this guy named David Reeveman, who's just one of those, you know, whiz kids, and he's been writing XGL all by himself. And on top of Glitz, which is basically, you know, it's like a GL layer that Cairo uses. So, you know, it's like a backend for Cairo. If you're familiar with Cairo, it's the new vector package. So basically, if you haven't kept up with developments in X architecture, it's time to catch up. That's the way things are now. You know, with Cairo, with the render extension, you know, with the damage extension, you know, with XGL, with the compositing manager. I mean, it's a completely different world now. You know. So you know, one of the demos that David cooked up is like the Apple Exposé functionality that you've probably seen. He wrote it in about, I don't know, 2 hours or something like that. You know, you hit a key and, you know, all your windows go, you know, and if one of them's got running video in it, it keeps running. You know, you can have a transparent terminal on top of running video. One of the demos he did that's really cool is you can have 6 virtual desktops that are the 6 sides of a cube. And then you can hold down, I think it's Control Alt, and you click and drag on the edge, and it rotates the cube, so you can kind of just peek over at the other desktop to see if your compile finished or if it's still going. And if it's still going, it, you know, you watch it running on that edge of the cube that you're looking at. You know, it's unbelievable. You know, so Sun kind of came at this 3D desktop idea, which I think is a little weird. You know, I think. What's the thing called? Looking Glass. Yeah, Looking Glass. But they did it in this way where it, like, uses the Java 3D APIs. And this is the right way to go. What David's doing is the right way to go because all existing apps immediately get the benefit of it. So, you know, I wish I could run it full-time today. The reason I'm not running it full-time on my machine is that the ATI drivers I'm using, the 3D accelerated drivers, have bugs and they crash sometimes.
Yeah, the ATI drivers is not that great.
If you've got an NVIDIA card right now, basically you can be living in the future today. You know,
it's available now.
It's also all anti-alias fonts are something like 5 times faster than core fonts in your existing server. I mean, we can render on average hardware 2 million glyphs a second with the server. It's unbelievable. He uses the hardware to render fonts. Basically, you create a little mask for every glyph, and then we cache the masks, so you have a glyph cache in hardware, and then your compositing is all done by the hardware. So it's unbelievable. You know, it's so obvious, you know, the X server. You know, right now, with the server, if you move windows around, they do not generate expose events on other windows. You know, so you don't get that flicker that you get in X when you move windows around. It just looks solid. You know, it's the way things should be. It's incredible. So this is one of the revolutions we think that we're conceding right now in the Linux desktop world. This XGL thing is going to blow people away. We can get working hardware acceleration drivers, you know. This is going to completely change everything.
How far off do you think that is to be included mainstream?
I don't know. I have no idea. It's hard to even speculate. I want to include it as soon as possible, you know, in SUSE, but we're not going to include it until it works, obviously.
So right now, anybody could just go out and grab
You can go grab it, yeah. It's a little tricky to compile, but I mean, it's not too bad. You can go to freedesktop.org/software/xserver. There's a little script there, and you just grab that script and add --enable- XGL server to the configure line for the X server. That's it. You've got it.
How hard has it been to get the chip developers to release the specs in order? Like, NVIDIA does great with releasing the drivers, but they're closed.
They don't release the specs. NVIDIA is great at releasing the drivers, but they're closed. The reason is that there's this weird thing happening now in hardware where basically a lot of the hardware vendors are becoming software vendors. So what I mean by that is that the hardware is becoming just these general processing units, and then all the logic is for printers, for example. A lot of the color calibration and other like magic behind, a lot of these Epson printers is in the drivers themselves, not in the hardware, because it's cheaper to offload that work to the software. So the printer manufacturer says, well, we could lock this into the EEPROM or whatever, but then changing it's hard. We can't improve it over time. If there's a bug, we can't fix it in the hardware. So
plus, it's cheaper to manufacture if they don't have to have all that code sitting on the machine.
Well, yeah, it's cheaper to test. It's cheaper. It's just the right way to go. So they move that into software. I mean, the paragon of this or whatever is the Win modems. Where basically they said, well, our CPUs are fast enough now that we can make tones of whatever frequency we need to, with the CPU. So we'll just have the Win modem be like a general, speaker essentially. So it's just going to modulate. So I think that's the major example people know. But what's happening it's happening in the graphics card area too. Where basically we have these real fancy GPUs, and then a lot of work's just being offloaded to software. Less so probably than some of the other driver areas, but I think it'll go more and more in that direction. So what does that mean? Well, it means these guys are probably never going to be able to fully open source all their drivers. Now what's happening is that people are writing open source drivers in certain areas. So if you have like a ThinkPad X30 or something like that, it probably has the ATI, RV250 chipset or something like that in it. And that one has an open source driver, which does acceleration and works great. So some of them will catch up, but I think I think basically we're gonna have to live with at least for some time for a lot of chipsets with proprietary GL drivers. So the world I would envision is one where you have kind of this proprietary OpenGL driver for your card, and then you have everything above that is open source. So you have the XGL server that sits on top of that, and you run your applications on there, and you run a fancy compositing manager or whatever else you want to use.
Do you foresee that being a problem, though, if they start, like, in the case of the
Win
modems?
Yeah, it's definitely a problem. I mean, the problem is you can't recompile your kernel,
Right.
You can't fix bugs, or you can't move it to the PPC if you want to, actually that's probably a strange example for hardware, but you basically...
No, it's not a strange example, because we have that problem all the time. We love PPC.
Yeah, but not with drivers, right? Maybe you do. The point is, it's definitely a problem. We need to, if we can get these guys, especially the video guys, if we can get these guys to start open sourcing their drivers, it would be a big boon for them and for us. I think the first one to do it will sell a lot of cards.
The one thing that drives everybody crazy is the wireless card manufacturers. Everything's closed, and it's all has to be backwards engineered to figure out how to get the damn things to work. And then once we get it working, they go and change the chipsets on the different versions.
Yeah, but one of the weird things I've been hearing there is that there's an FCC regulation that says that when you sell products classified under certain FCC classes, they can only speak certain frequencies. But
yeah,
again,
the 11G stuff.
Right.
Going to the wrong frequencies.
Well, some of these cards now, they're just general modulator, demodulator, so you can just tell them to talk any frequency you want in software. So, FCC might mean, FCC regulations might actually outlaw open source drivers for some of these things. Hard to say, I'm not a lawyer, but, I agree. This hardware problem is still our biggest issue.
I guess one of the really big questions that I would love to hear is, what are Novell's plans as far as SUSE? Are they going to keep it around completely independent? Are they going to integrate it into the Novell Linux distribution?
Mm-hmm. Well, so SUSE is the Novell Linux distribution.
Is it?
It is, absolutely.
The same code base exactly?
Same exact code base, yeah. So I assume you're referring to Novell Linux Desktop.
Yes.
So that is a direct derivative of SUSE Linux Enterprise Server 9. With just a couple of packages changed, it's essentially SUSE Linux. So SUSE Linux is the Novell Linux. I think Novell is integrating with SUSE. You see with OES, our Open Enterprise Server, you see Novell functionality. and SUSE functionality kind of coming together, you know, into a single product that people can buy. You know, so I think, I think that's been happening. You know,
so why have a completely different Novell release of it? Why just keep it as SUSE and just put, you know, Novell SUSE? Because there is, recently I saw the release of the Novell Linux distribution.
Novell Linux Desktop.
Desktop.
Right.
Is that aimed more towards the corporate users?
It is aimed more towards corporate users, yeah.
Kind of what Red Hat's doing?
We kind of put a Novell brand on that, I think, because we thought, you know, with the Novell name, you know, we'd be able to kind of come to these corporate people and say, listen, a big company's serious about the Linux Desktop. We'd be able to send a different message than it would send to say, SUSE Linux Desktop. So that was the idea behind that. You know, it's a marketing thing, but it is absolutely the same code base. We have one engineering team for the Linux operating system. You know, we have one distribution.
Are those the guys in Germany on the SUSE?
Well, they're in Germany. They're in, you know, Boston. They're in Utah now. Primarily, yeah, it's, you know, it's the SUSE team, but it's you know, it's a multi-location, you know, multi-effort team now.
Now, is, like, I've used SUSE for the past couple of years, about 5 years, I've been playing around off and on with it. And it's always seemed to me to be primarily a KDE desktop, is what it was swinging to. Has that...
Well, we've changed that, I think.
That has changed now?
Yeah,
because I haven't used the last couple of releases too heavily. So
you should check out 9.3 when it comes out. I mean, obviously, you know, we have some people at SUSE who are great at making KDE work well. But we also have some GNOME people now at Novell, and so you know, I think in 9.3, you know, we're going to ship with GNOME 2.10. You know, it'll be a pretty substantially nice release for GNOME users.
Great.
I guess one of the big hurdles, you know, we talk about the different desktops environments, is does the code base have to be unified, or is it just has to be more interoperability between the two?
The basic vision that everyone's bought into now is this idea that, you know, essentially, you know, if there are 5 interfaces or 10 interfaces, or, and people can configure them or whatever, that doesn't seem to be the major issue. The major issue is if I'm an ISV and I come to Linux and I want to order a Linux application and I want to work with other Linux applications, how do I do that? And we don't want 3 sets of answers, because then you create these 3 separate ecosystems, these silos that don't, you know, work together. So the solution that we've all kind of been pursuing for some time now is to take the, you know, critical areas of integration or critical exposed APIs and push them down below the KDE or the GNOME layer into freedesktop.org. And then, you know, so there's standards there already, and there are APIs defined there already. There's things like DBus that are emerging, which is essentially lightweight. You know, it's like tool talk from the old days, but it's also essentially a lightweight RPC system, you know, so... Yeah, so things like that we're kind of all agreeing to use. And so what you end up with is GNOME and KDE are kind of these thin shells on top of, you know, this, you know, to the ISV, they're these thin shells on top of, you know, of a shared set of APIs. So that's what we're moving towards. I think that's all that matters. You know, you can't eliminate either. And
you get people who like the other desktops.
Hey, but you need standards. The reason I can run a GNOME application next to a KDE application is because they both use X. And, you know, so if that were to splinter, that would be a serious problem. So we want to, you know, as you move kind of up in the stack, you know, you get, like, more and more functionality. Like, you know, X handles my cut and paste, but does it handle my bindings for file types? You know, so when I click on a .png, I get, you know, my application of choice. No, it doesn't. So we need a higher level shared, you know, shared API or shared file format or shared protocol that handles that kind of thing.
If I were a business owner and I was considering switching between a Windows business, I'll say business desktop, even though I know that you can't really conduct real business on Windows, a Windows business desktop to Novell Linux desktop, the Novell's business desktop, and I called you and I wanted to know why I should do that, what would you tell me? Why should I switch to Novell's business desktop? What advantages does it have? What advantages does it have over any other Linux desktop?
Yeah.
What makes you special?
So I'd say the main thing, the main point I would probably make to you first, because I don't think anyone is really, I think very few people are at the stage where they're kind of fighting between, you know, is it Novell Linux desktop? Should I use, you know, another company's desktop? I think, you know, the stage we're at in this industry is people are looking, you know, they have Windows, and they're saying, should I move off of Windows? And that's the question that we're
well, but even if they are moving off the windows, a lot of times they will sit there and consider, should we go with Novell,
right.
Or should we go with Red Hat's enterprise stuff that they have going on right
sure,
now?
And sure. So
why would we want
so,
to? Go
so
with
my Novell? My main point though is that if you know my first order of business in answering your question is to convince you that you should use Linux and. That's the important thing. I think I think you'll sort of naturally choose Novell as the right solution. But the reasons are fairly simple. I think there are probably two or three basic reasons. You know, as a business owner, as someone who looks at a balance sheet, that you'd want to use Linux. First are viruses and security. This has become such an enormous nuisance to people, and such a costly nuisance to people on Windows. And it's just a much more manageable problem on Linux. So, the way that works, basically, you have a lot of people in your company who don't do anything with their computers. They're just like using the web and using email and a little bit of documents and maybe one other application that they use. And why do these people have these virus bins sitting under their desk? Why are these people poking holes in your network and creating problems for you? Why don't they just use a lockdown desktop, something that's not that's not going to be vulnerable. So that's the the first argument. Second, I think is that with Linux you can create sort of an architecture on the network which is sort of fundamentally different than what you would create with Windows. So because of Linux's technical flexibility at the low level, you can create a thin client or a stateless machine very easily, that boots off the network. Or that boots locally and actually has all of its data and configuration on the network. So you can centrally administer applications, you can centrally administer data, you can centrally back it up. You can create these kind of different network architectures that are a Unix-based operating system is just much more suited to do. With Windows, you sort of are hacking your way there. So I think those things offer kind of people lower costs. And then I think there's an argument you make to this guy about openness, which is that you can tell vendors to compete with each other. Essentially, with Windows, you're going to Microsoft. With Linux, you can ask that question: should it be Red Hat? Should it be Novell? Should it be another company? Should I get hardware from IBM HP with solution? Where does it come from? So this is the x86 architecture story. Basically, you create a commodity by allowing everyone to create it and compete in the marketplace, lowest cost, and you end up with a low cost solution that works everywhere. And so we think that'll happen with Linux. I think to answer your other part of your question, why should I use Novell over these things really come down to the nature of the company you want to go with and what level of support and services that they're going to give you. They don't come down to the software, and the reason they don't come down to the software is obvious. It's all open source. The difference between Red Hat or in over a long enough time period is small. And so I think fundamentally, you're talking 1%. So I think fundamentally, at a particular point in time, you might say Novell's better. We happen to think Novell's better, right? But I think fundamentally, we don't want major client differentiation. And the reason is, if we have a substantially different software stack in our client than Red Hat, then suddenly, what's the Linux desktop? There's no Linux desktop. There's a Red Hat desktop. There's a Novell desktop.
It's fragmented.
It's fragmented, and then you go to an ISV and you say, come right to our desktop, and they say, okay, but you guys have split the market 50 ways. We're not going to port our application to Linux because that really means porting it to 50 different desktops. So
how about Novell as a company, though?
Well,
into the front door of Novell and I said, I want to see what you guys are running on your computers.
Yeah.
Are you highly? I know you're.
So we've been. So
Linux,
so the first thing I'll so you want me to tell you? I'll tell you. We're clearly the best positioned people. First of all, we're actually going through this experience ourselves. We're taking 6,000 Windows users and converting them to Linux right now. We've got about 60% of the company converted now. We've got 90% of the company on OpenOffice and off of Microsoft Office.
Do you find that an easy transition?
It's a challenging transition. We are pushing the envelope at Novell in doing this. A year and a half ago, we canceled our Microsoft support contract, and we said, we're going to move everything over to Linux. And You know, so we've had to actually go through the process of saying, okay, let's segment our user base, let's find out what applications and hardware people need and use, let's find out where the problem areas are, let's see what stages we can move people over in. One of the early stages we did was moving people off of Microsoft Office and onto OpenOffice and off of IE, onto Firefox on the client side, of, you know, on Windows. So they're still using Windows, but they've suddenly, you know, they've eliminated IE, so a lot of potential for trouble goes away there. And you know they've moved out of OpenOffice, so suddenly the move to Linux is much more comfortable. It's kind of a staged thing. People get comfortable with open source, you know, on Windows first. It becomes sort of a seamless transition. Plus with this thing going on, I've had like the best feedback system for my desktop development team ever. You know, we've got right next door people actually trying
Everybody
to use the thing.
It, yeah.
I think Linux desktop developers haven't even seen Windows in 5 years. Most of them, they like. You talk to a lot of Linux desktop developers, and it sounds like they haven't looked at Windows since 95. You know, it really sounds that way. And, so we've got real perspective on this stuff. We also recognize that if you're moving over to a Linux desktop, you're probably not going to move your entire company all at once. You're probably going to have a mixed Windows and Linux environment for a little while. So we have actual tools to help you do this. You know, we ship our Linux desktop with great Windows interoperability. If you've got Windows file shares, Windows directories, other things like that out there, you buy a Novell Linux desktop, you're able to work with those things out of the box very easily. So, so these are some, sort of decisions that we make and some of the things that we understand. Also Novell offers, a wide, and very, full suite of software to serve Linux desktop users. So, if you're maintaining Linux desktops and you need central management tools, you want to use the same central management tools for Windows and for Linux. We have ZenWorks. ZenWorks has proven itself in this space, and with red carpet stitched into it, it works great against a Linux system too. So you can manage your Linux desktops and your Windows desktops with the same profile. You can say this is my marketing person profile. These should have these applications, and they should be able to access these websites, or they should update once a day, or whatever, and deploy that same profile to Windows or Linux users. So, we think this is pretty powerful. This is a pretty compelling solution. We think you go to Red Hat, they say, well, we haven't looked at Windows since Windows 95. We don't really know what your problems are. Oh, you want to have both Windows and Linux in the same, office. We'll help you with the Linux side. So we think we kind of have this much more reasonable approach. Plus, we answer the phone in 80 countries. We have thousands of consultants all over the world. Our consulting force is larger than Red Hat's entire company. That kind of thing. So.
It is
I would hate to break in. How are we fixed for time? Because I think
we're about to. I'm gonna die here. So
okay. We're gonna wrap this up. One question I want to ask you about the desktop.
Mm-hmm.
I work in an educational environment. Novell is really big in the educational environment, K-12,
mm-hmm.
Higher education. One of the things I see lacking on it would be great to be able to move to a Novell or a Linux desktop in the educational environment. But there's a whole bunch of applications for children, educational mm-hmm. applications, that just do not exist at all in mm-hmm. the Linux world. Do you see that as Novell branches off into Linux desktop, you talk about the corporate uses for it. Do you think that with Novell's force behind it, it would encourage these educational software developers to start looking at Linux as a viable option to port your software to?
Well, I think that'll be driven by that'll be driven outside the U.S. first. Essentially, the three big areas where we see Linux desktop adoption happening right now are first kind of Unix workstation replacements or NT workstation replacements, which are kind of technical users or animators or people like that. Second, these kind of fixed function users. If you're doing insurance claims processing or you're a call center and your CIO says you're going to use a Linux desktop, these guys. And then I think third, public sector and education, mainly outside the U.S., and it's driven by these kind of principles of state where people say we don't want to run a proprietary operating system or we don't want to pay money to an American monopoly. So, instead we're going to, we're going to run it up with, something we own. It's one of the things about Linux is everyone, in France, Linux is French, and in the U.S., of course, it's an American thing. In Finland, it's Finnish, and Brazil, it's Brazilian, because everyone's got a stake. So we think in countries like Brazil, you're gonna see this education thing really take off, and I think that'll probably drive some content for, you know, for schools. I think probably some of that content should move to the web. Mm-hmm. You know, I would guess some of that content should move to the web. And there's, of course, a lot of open source projects out there, too. If you do some searches, you'd be surprised.
Well, yeah, the ones that are out there are fantastic.
Yeah, there's some good ones. It's not a full suite, but, you know, I saw this awesome tool the other day. What was it called? It's a universe. You know, it creates a solar system.
Celestia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That thing is unbelievable.
That's neat as well.
You just type sun or whatever, and then it, like, zips you over to the sun. And
did you go through the tutorial of it? It'll just fly you around the universe?
That was unbelievable.
Solar system.
It's mind-blowing. So, anyway, yeah, I think we're going to be in good shape.
Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks.
You're doing a great job.
Thanks. Nice to meet you guys.
Hey, that was our interview with Nate Friedman at Novell yesterday at the Linux World Expo. We weren't planning on doing a live show tonight because that was pre-recorded yesterday, and I must say that Link and Alan did a fantastic job cutting it together. As I sat there tapping away and looking at stuff like XGL and all sorts of stuff on the laptop. But that ended up being a fairly short show, and we got about 45 minutes left on BinRev Radio. So what I thought I'd do is I just, for those new listeners who have now just jumped onto the show, they might not have heard a lot of the old bits and stuff that we used to do. So I'm going to start chucking some of those in there. Playing our old bits, starting off with, I believe this was our first bit that we did, which was our favorite beer commercial. So I'm going to fire that up, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Freaking hard. The buzz is on until Alan drops the bro bomb.
Hey, bro, how about another round?
Indeed, how about it? Show that douchebag just what it means to be a bro. Because when you care enough not to care, send him to the Rockies. Coors, cold brewed, straight from the goat piss streams of Colorado. The beer of dickhead bros the world over. It's guys' night out, and you've been drinking hard. The buzz is on until Alan drops the bro bomb.
Hey, bro, how about another round?
Indeed, how about it? Show that douchebag just what it means to be a bro. Because when you care enough not to care, send them to the Rockies. Coors, cold brewed, straight from the goat piss streams of Colorado. The beer of dickhead bros the world over.
All right, I played that twice because I messed up and did not have the volume all the way up on XMMS over here. So that was our homage to our favorite beer. And we actually went to a bar down there at Linux World Expo, which was right next to the parking garage we were in, called Bukowski's, named after one of my favorite authors of the 20th century, Charles Bukowski. And they had one of his poems and some of his writing up on the wall. It talked about, you know, he had a dislike for the Coors drinking people of America. He did not have respect for Coors, obviously. And if you know Charles Bukowski, you know he is a hardcore, or was a hardcore drinker. All right, moving onward. I believe the next bit that we had was our first collaborative bit. Now, this was at the end of this past summer when Lug Radio and Slug Radio
had taken a very long sabbatical. We threw together a little joke movie bit forecasting a movie called where we went out as the tech show to find out what happened to Lug Radio. And here it is. In a world still hostile to open source, where tech radio shows are all about that other operating system, three maverick groups decided to go for the gold.
Hey, 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 we are here. That's episode...
This is episode 4.
Episode 4.
Oh, yeah, that's a bit odd. So, yeah, it's the introduction of Sada and Sada and Sada. Oh, my God.
Woo!
We
the C programmers. We started zero.
Really, really close to this.
Mike again. Just to kill us all. Anyway.
Now, yeah, two shows are missing. www.loadradio.org. Can't find the server. No!
Where's that episode 5 of Slug Radio?
Why?
This fall, take a journey with the boys from the Tech Show across oceans and continents.
Attention all passengers.
Like drop your pants and grab your ankles.
Now boarding.
Damn, that's a big finger.
Oh, gotta love that Homeland Security.
To find and rescue the missing shows.
Hello? Lug Radio?
Slug Radio?
What they find will shock you.
Damn! That's a lot of bottles.
You hear that?
What?
Sounds like thunder.
Yeah. What is it?
Be prepared to be blown to the back wall of your computer room.
Holy shit! It's Godzilla!
Linux Link Studios presents a Screaming Little Girls production. Alan Metzler.
What's that smell?
Link Fessenden.
Hurry! Put it in there!
And Dan Washko.
Woo!
Doggy! Get over here, Alan, you sweet pie.
Fight the big lizard in Mozilla X, the Linux Link Tech Show. Mega knockout big battle for missing Lug Radio and Slug Radio shows. One man will stink.
Oh, Dan caught one.
I got another. Quick, light me up. We'll hit this lizard with the ass cannon.
And two men will find a special kind of love.
We'll always love you.
Will you two get a room? And three men will find the shocking truth behind it all.
Quick to the blogs!
Come on, Alan! Get moving!
It's not a new month yet!
But will they find love in Slug Radio? Mozilla X, the Linux Link Tech Show. Mega knockout big battle for missing Lug and Slug Radio shows. Coming soon.
Hey, maybe they're in here. Will you two get a room already?
Yeah, that was our first pseudo-collaborative effort. It would have been a little better, I think, had I allowed the other two to collaborate more instead of just sending them lines. But for some reason, I had it in my head that I wanted to keep this thing a secret. And it was a long project, let me tell you. I had to find all the music and cut it all together. Did that using Audacity and Resound. It worked out fairly well, but if you ever played around with messing with audio clips and splicing things together like that, boy, is it a laborious process, just trying to get everything right, the frequencies to match with one another, removing noise. It is a labor-intensive process. Just to do a short clip like that took a couple of days, but it turned out pretty well. People liked it. This next one was an ad we did, or I did actually, for Firefox. And then we'll start getting into some of the stuff that Link did, which is really good. But here's our Firefox ad to promote Firefox. Oh, yeah. That's it. What? Damn pop-up.
Okay. Okay, here we go. All right. Ooh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, take it off. Yeah. Go. Damn it. Come on. Oh, what's going on? Oh, yeah, okay. That's it. All right. Yeah. There, go for it. Put it on. Prep it all. Shit, shit, shit. All right now. Yeah, all right. Ooh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just like that. Come on. Yeah. I know it's what you want. Oh, yeah. Here we go. Here comes the money. All right. Here we go, baby. Oh, I'm there. Okay. Crash! No! Explorer, no! Pop-ups have you missing the money shot? Get your porn the way it was meant to be. Pop-up free. Get Firefox. It's just better. www.mozilla.org.
What's going on in here?
Nothing now. Mozilla Firefox. Don't get caught with your browser down. Brought to you by the Friends of Firefox and the Explorer Eradication Team.
Now, it would be wonderful if Firefox, when they put out that ad in the Wall Street Journal, provided a link to that little bit there. That would be funny. But anyway, I put that together and, you know, played it for Link, and Link found the perfect sandpaper effect, and we threw that in there, and it just made all the difference. That was a great job. So, yeah, in a way, it was a collaborative effort. But, yeah, that was really, really great. Fun thing to do. Again, that was done with, I think, primarily Audacity. I stole some of the Windows sounds with the beeps in the sound when something crashes. You can find those, of course, in the Windows Media directory. You could just record it off of any typical Windows session. You'll probably hear three or four of those, particularly if you're using Internet Explorer. Okay, moving on. We had our first year back in September, and Link put together a first-year review, which was really great. It was around that time where I got extremely busy, so Link at work, so Link had to do the lion's share of the work. He did a fantastic job. And since then, I think, you know, between the three of us, haven't had the opportunity to put a lot of bits like that together, or I guess even think of stuff. I know I haven't personally because I've been extremely busy with work and family issues. So hopefully, as things start to slow down, we'll be able to put some more of these type of bits together, some funny stuff. I got a couple ideas, and I'm sure Link and Alan do also. But here is Link's one-year review.
Welcome to the Tech Show, a year in review.
You know, actually, I paused that for a second there because I was just thinking as I heard that sound coming, it sounds like someone's taking a hit off a huge joint, and that would mean we were actually recording a daily source code bit, but no, that wasn't that.
In the beginning, there was nothing. Just an idea. Static, really. It all started maybe a year and a half ago. I had been listening to another Linux web radio show for a long while now, and I began to get the idea about doing something similar. I thought it might be fun to try and make a downloadable audio show that covered topics about Linux, open source, and technology. Something along the likes of some of the good presentations we've had at our LUG meetings. So I finally ran the idea past Dan to see if he would be interested. And he was. Dan, at that point in time, had been experimenting with running an Icecast server in his house, so that he could pump his favorite band, The Clash, around from computer to computer while I was there working.
So Link calls me up with this idea of doing a web radio show. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, here's another CFK debacle he's going to rope me into. He brought up about the streaming server I had played around with a few months beforehand. I don't even know why I did it, but hey, I got to stream The Clash. That was before we became RIAA Enlightened. Anyway, I thought, what's another lug project? At least this sounded like fun. And with Link gung-ho behind it and me on board, it would probably go somewhere.
And thus was born the idea that we could probably do the show live. I thought that would be a great thing. And then we could stream the current show repetitively until it was time for the next one. That would give everyone a chance to hear it. So we set a date. Wednesday, September 24th, 2003. And I got down to the task of making our intro music. I found some pretty cool free techno MIDI music on the web, and I converted that over. And our singer is actually Flight, which is a text-to-speech program available for Unix. Altogether, I think it turned out pretty well.
Link really took off with the idea. He generated this opening music, and I gotta say, I was really impressed. It's one of those pieces where you sit back and say to yourself, man, how did he do that? Where did he get that music? And exactly what was that voice saying? Well, admiration was soon followed by, you know what this needs? Some fart sounds.
Of course, Dan came over and added his own personal touches. And that became the ending music. The show was born. Hi, and welcome to the very first edition of the Linux Link Tech Show. My name is Link Fessenden, and we also have with us tonight our co-host Dan Washko and the ever-popular Alan Metzler.
Back when the Tech Show was first planned, I wasn't even a part of it. All I really knew of it was just the emails that Link and Dan were putting out on the mailing list.
Boy, Alan really saved our butts that day. He came through with a mixer and then ran out to Radio Shack for us and got us some mics that worked, too.
Then I remember down in the basement I had an old Radio Shack mixing board, so I sent Link an email asking if he wanted to use it for the show, and he replied, yeah, so I stopped over at Dan's that night, and the rest is history.
First off, I'd like to once again thank Alan, the man, for bringing over to the mixer and running out to Radio Shack and getting us a new mic. If it wasn't for him, this thing wouldn't be possible today. But equally important is the software we're running this on. This week is quite sweet because the official stable release of Dynabolic has been put out. It was just yesterday that it was actually made official. 1.0, that's what we're running right here right now, using Muse to stream our mics and other sound effects in.
This is the third rendition of Dynabolic that we've done so far, right, Dan?
Yes, it is, and all have worked admirably.
Of course, we did run into our share of problems along the way. Come on.
You gotta stop that.
Screw it up. A 15-minute delay. Holy mackerel.
All right, and we're back.
Technical difficulties.
Sorry about that.
Just me seem to be having a few technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties, please stand up.
Technical difficulties.
I should do it.
We up and running?
We should be.
Hey, everybody, they say that we're up and running again.
We should be.
Technical difficulties.
Holy mackerel. Please stand by. Screw it up. Holy mackerel.
And we've also had our share of sideline projects going on.
Still sitting over here futzing with the USB.
Well, he just started working on it 5 minutes before the show started.
Right.
You know he's doing stuff because like tech show, man. He can come in here and be making something on the show, and Dan's over there doing his compile something or something every damn time.
I'm not compiling anything right now.
And we've also taken great liberties in harassing one another with the GIMP.
Gimp and
stuff. Stop, babe, trying to make it look like Alan.
I GIMP.
Gimp and
stuff.
And, of course, our level of preparedness is on par with no other.
We kind of only think about each show about 5 minutes before it starts, which works really well for us.
All in all, I guess you could say we've had a lot of fun with this show. We poked a lot of fun at each other, all the while giving you some news and our opinions about Linux, open source, and technology. I know we've learned a lot, and we hope you have too. We hope you've had a lot of fun listening to us over the last year and continue listening to us in the future. So wherever you are tonight, join us in celebrating the one-year anniversary of the Linux Link Tech Show. Cheers. And here's my best wishes for many more.
Pulling up Link. Pulling up Link Tech Show.
For some reason, I feel compelled to add a fart sound effect in just about everything we do. For some reason, I don't know. But that was Link did a fantastic job on the original promo introduction music, and then I had to turn around and muck it all up. But just so you know, right now, I am not compiling anything yet. Maybe a little bit later, but not now. No compiling right now. All right, moving on. I was just going through my home directory and stuff and looking at the files. As you can tell, because I left my mic on, and you can hear my tap, tap, tapping away. Sorry about that. I'm going to turn my mic off in between. Before I get to Link's fantastic 12 Days of the Tech Show, which was over our Christmas episode, I'm going to play some promos and stuff that I have laying around. I hope they're promos. It's hard to tell. Let's see what this one is. I suspect I know what it is, but hold on.
Damn it. It goes now. Texo. 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 Fuck. Wait. Wait.
Now, for the record, that was Buck, she said, not the other word, Buck with a B, the name of our cat, named after Charles Bukowski, by the way, but Buck. That was my daughter just saying tech show stuff into the microphone, because, man, when they walk in this room and they see the mixer and the microphones and stuff, that's what they were. The first thing they want to do is jump right on the mixer, the microphones, and start doing stuff. So I recorded my youngest daughter Avery to one day. So we, and then Link incorporated that into the new tech show music, which is what you hear on a regular basis, and we'll be hearing probably again a little bit later. All right, here's a promo from Scale. Well, we'll just play it, see what happens.
This is Yvonne with the Southern California Linux Tech Show, and you're listening to the Linux Link Tech Show. Are you working on an interesting project related to Linux, open source, or free software? Then the Southern California Linux Expo wants you. We invite you to participate in our call for papers and presentation of real networks. For more information, please see our website at www.socallinuxexpo.org. That's SOCALLINUXEXPO.ORG. We look forward to seeing you there.
All right. That was from, I think, Ian Rabinowitz, but I might have his name pronounced wrong. Font is a little small that I'm looking at right there. That was from Scale, and this one I think is his other one. Okay, that's not what I thought it was. That is a song, Smokescreen by Dash California 2004. I'm not sure exactly where we got it. But speaking of songs, let me play you a song. This Link contacted these people right about the time we first started the show. We were looking for music. It's called, the group is called X11. And I don't know, I guess they emailed him the URLs to get these MP3s off of wherever they had them. I don't know whatever has become of this group, where they are. I don't think I can get too much information from them. Maybe Link has that. He could post it to the chat. But this I really like their music, so I'm just going to play it. That ended abruptly. All right, that was X11. I'm not sure what the name of the song is. They just have it as Get01-Jam16-441-Triangular. So that was X11. Before we run out of time, which we got 12 minutes left that I need to fill up for Ben Rev, I want to play Link's awesome 12 Days of the Tech Show, based off of the 12 Days of Christmas. So in case you're listening to us again for the first time, what I'm doing, we didn't have an official show tonight because we went to Linux World Expo in Boston yesterday, did an interview with Nate Friedman, and pre-recorded some stuff for tonight's show. It only ended up being 51 minutes, so with BinRev Radio, we have an hour and a half slot. I'm just filling in the rest of the time with bits and pieces that we've done in the past, some promos, and a little bit of commentary about it. So without further ado, here is Link's 12 Days of the Tech Show.
On the first day of Christmas, the Tech Show gave to me a Linux distro on a CD. On the second day of Christmas, the Tech Show gave to me two Skype phone calls and a Linux distro on a CD. On the third day of Christmas, the Tech Show gave to me three geeks a-chatting, two Skype phone calls, and a Linux distro on a CD. On the fourth day of Christmas, the Tech Show gave to me four blogs a-blogging, three geeks a-chatting, two Skype phone calls, and a Linux distro on a CD. On the fifth day of Christmas, the Tech Show gave to me Dan Farching. Four blogs of blogging, three geeks of chatting, two Skype phone calls, and a Linux distro on a CD. On the sixth day of Christmas, the Tech Show gave to me six computers running Dan Farching. blogs are blogging, three geeks are chatting, two Skype phone calls, and a Linux distro on a CD. On the seventh day of Christmas, the tech show gave to me 7 bits of playing, 6 computers running, damn farting. 4 blogs are blogging, 3 geeks are chatting, 2 Skype phone calls, 10 a Linux distro on a CD.
Wow, this is getting long. How about we move along to the money verse?
On the 12th day of Christmas, the tech show gave to me 12 podcast casting, 11 Slackware updates, 10 fingers typing, 9 firmwares compiling, 8 CDs burning, 7 bits of playing, 6 computers running, ooh, Dan is farting, 4 blogs are blogging, 3 geeks are chatting, 2 Skype phone calls. And a Linux distro on a CD.
Bravo, Link, bravo. Fantastic job. That was the 12 Days of the Tech Show by Link Fezzanen. Excellent job. All right, here's something going out for Patrick because he brought it up. This is my, if I can find it, oh, this is my Hydrogen drum machine demo. Hydrogen is a drum machine for Linux. It was a pretty cool software to use, and this is the demo I created. Actually, that wasn't the full demo. I may have lost the full demo forever, but I think it's on the Dynabolic system. That was just 53 seconds. The full demo was about 5 minutes long. So I think we had a good idea as to what it was. But if I ever find it, maybe we'll play it again someday. Speaking of Dynabolic, we're still using the 1.3 version. The 1.4 runs fantastic and faster, but for some reason it does not like the files that we have over here for the archives, and we've been playing on the Linux Link stream not only our files, but Lug Radio and the Linux Box show currently, the recent episodes of those, and it just was puking on playing some of those files, but now it seems to be running perfect. So we're going to stick with 1.3. Why change a good thing if it works? We just need to get a better CD-ROM drive into this Dynabolic box. Here's something that's not ours, but I thought was hilarious when I first heard it. We played it on a show a couple months ago. Britney's Perfume.
Have you ever met a guy and wondered what might happen? Thought about the possibilities? Asked yourself, what if? Hi, I'm Brittany. What's your name? You smell like feet. Beef and cheese. That's so hot. He's got no job. Here's my account number. Are those Marlboro Reds? Let's get some Cheetos. And chain smoke. Sideways Yankees hat. That armpit stained wife beater. I think he's sexy. He hasn't showered in weeks. Or seen his kids. Deadbeat dad. I think I'm falling for him. Did he just climb out of a dumpster? He can't keep his eyes off of me. Or my ATM card. Close your eyes. What's that smell?
Fetterline, the newest fragrance from Britney Spears.
You're stinky.
Available at trailer parks everywhere.
The first time I heard that, I could not stop laughing. That is a great bit. I got that from the world of Britney.com, so if you're interested, check them out. It's a little hard to find now, because being a couple months old, they don't have it right off their website. It's kind of a a hidden thing that you could do a Google search on and be able to find it. So anyway, oh, here's something. One of Link's favorite groups. That's Dreamt Of by Armadillos, Wouldn't You Like to Know. Not for everyone's taste. I personally like Dreamt Of by Armadillos. That is one of their shorter pieces. You can find more about them by looking up DOBA on Google. I think it's DOBA.org, Dreamt Of by Armadillos. They were kind enough to send us their entire collection on CD. So we got a lot of music from them, which, you know, in my opinion is really good. I think they're interesting. Wonder what this is. Well, that's the one that's not working too well. Let me see if I can whip off one more thing before I finally close out tonight.
Hi, I'm Matti from Finland, and I'm listening to the Link Tech Show, and I'm not wrestling with polar bears.
All right, that was Matti J. Garke. Fantastic. We're going to close up the show tonight. Thank you for listening. We'll be back live with a regular show next week. I'm not sure if we're having a guest or not. Just check out the blog for the tech show, http://thelinuxlink.net/TLLTS for more information. We thank you very much for listening. I am going to close off with the old original tech show theme that we used to use. Thank you very much, and you guys have a great week.
Pulling up Link Tech Show.